All right, so part 10, what are you thinking? What are you thinking, part 10? And I don't know what I was thinking when I thought I could do this as one part, but now we're up to part 10. What are you thinking? Now, I'm hoping that at this point, you are all asking the question of yourself as you're doing things, as your thoughts are coming into your mind, and then you're considering doing something, you're asking the question of yourself, hey, what am I thinking? So that you are actually consciously aware of the thought process that then leads to the actions, the habits, destinies, etc. Okay, so that we're getting a hold of that. We've been looking at a section I've been calling the mind and thinking of man and how it relates to authority, or how it doesn't relate to authority, meaning that it doesn't actually work well with it, with authority. And mostly what we're dealing with in this mind thought process authority thing is where your authority kicks in over his authority. That's mostly the problem. It can also be where we allow others to have authority rather than him, or others have authority rather than yourself. But really, mostly what we're going to see, it's really you on that throne needing to get off that throne. It's you having authority that you are usurping that's supposed to be his authority. Okay, so the Creator should be having authority that you are not allowing him to have. So you need to now be aware of how that plays out, what that looks like, so that you can then fix it. And that's the whole key when we're looking at scriptures. I want you to see what things look like and ask yourself, what does that look like in my life? Okay, when I'm reading here, okay, so what would that look like in my life? And we're going to begin in Luke chapter 8. In Luke chapter 8, and we're going to look at something you probably have heard me teach and have heard millions of times, the parable of the sower. And I want to just make sure that we're getting it now from the point of view of there's a part of this has to do with how we think. Of course, everything about actions that we see people taking have to do with how they think. And we'll begin in verse 9, in Luke 8, in verse 9. And his taught ones were asking him, saying, what does this parable mean? So I'm going to speed this up by not reading the parable again. He read a parable to them. He's going to read the whole thing back here and explain it. Okay? Well, maybe it's only a couple of verses. We'll go back to verse 5. A sower went out to sow his seed in verse 5, and he sowed. Some indeed fell by the wayside, and it was trodden down, and the birds of the heaven devoured it. Others fell on rock, and when it grew up, it withered because it had no moisture. Another fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up with it and choked it. And others fell on good soil and grew up and yielded a crop 100-fold. Having said this, he cried, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And the psalmist says, okay, we're hearing, but we don't get it. Now, I want you to notice something. We have this same issue today where people will read scripture, and here they could have, read this as much as heard it. I mean, they happened to be standing there when he said it. But we then have to remember their process was to do what? Ask their teacher what was meant by what was said. They didn't just tie into the Ruach and just let the Spirit tell them. They asked their teacher, the person who said it, well, what does that mean? Help explain this to me. And so he said, okay, let me explain this to you. And so they turned to a teacher. Now, this happens to be the teacher of all teachers. Okay, this is the greatest teacher. And he's also the one that said it, so he would be the best one to know what he meant by what he said. But we have them asking the teacher. So remember I said, what does it look like in your life? Remember, you're going to read stuff and think, when the person who wrote this thought I should know what was being said here and understood it. The person who wrote whatever you're reading probably figured that you would understand what they meant. And maybe if you were back then, whenever then was, if it was a prophet or went back in Moses' day or one of the apostles, and the people reading it then may have understood it much more clearly than you because of the timing and the context of the being that they were in that time, that they were there at the moment. But for you, you may think, well, the Ruach just teaches me. And they certainly could have just said that. Well, we got the Spirit. The Spirit would just teach us. Of course, a lot of Christians say, well, they didn't have the Spirit yet because Yeshua didn't die yet. And go back and listen to Understanding the Ruach. Okay, the Spirit has been around since it hovered over the earth back in Genesis 1. Okay, and John 1 tells you that those who, okay, let's just read that in John chapter 1 just to make sure that we're clear. I don't want to quote the verse wrong. In John 1, it said, It says, but as many as received him, this is verse 12. Now, by receiving him, it says that he was in the world and the world came to be through him. And as many as received him, this is all before verse 14. Okay, we're reading verse 12. Verse 14 is when he puts on flesh. So in what form were they receiving him? Through the Spirit, through the Word. As many as received him, to them he gave authority to be children of Elohim. So this light that came into the darkness, this light that's talked about all in John 1, we know this had to do with the Spirit. We also know that there's many verses about that there was a different spirit in Noah, a different spirit in Joshua and Caleb. There was a different spirit in, you just keep filling in the blanks. That spirit was the spirit of Elohim versus the spirit of man or the spirit of Hasatan. There are three main spirits that you deal with. I think I taught that in the Ruach teaching, but as well in the teaching called Tameh and Tahor, what state are you in? That there are more than one spirit that could be trying to get your attention and lead you. So in this, we understand that they could have just figured, oh, well, we should understand these things. But no, we're going to ask. Because the design is that we need to be taught. We need those for guidance. Abba wants us to look through and look up, go to teachers, then go to him, go up through the chain to get your answers. And he always works through people. Unless there are no people around, there's no people to access, and without access to them, then he may give you a direct download, maybe. But a lot of people come to me with their direct downloads, and they're scary, often. And they lead them in places the scriptures does not lead. And they have to be very careful with that. Okay, so that was a lot to say just to try to get introduced to this. So he gives us this idea about the sower and seed and what happens to the seed. And he's mostly talking about the nature of the ground. The nature of the ground. And they say, well, can you explain this to us? And he said, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the reign of Elohim, but to the rest in parables, that seeing they do not see and hearing they do not understand. And this is the parable. The seed is... Let's follow this now. The seed is the word of Elohim. That's the seed, the word of Elohim. And those by the wayside are the ones who hear. Then the devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts, lest having believed they should be saved or delivered out of their ignorance, out of their relationships that are wrong, out of all of the other things that they would be delivered of. Let's be careful with that word saved. You can go listen to the Are You Saved teaching for clarity. He says that they should be delivered. What does the word do? It brings light. It enlightens. It lets you know what's right and wrong. It lets you know the way of life that brings blessing and success, the way that brings cursing and disaster. And so it delivers you out of, and we're going to see this much more by the time we get to Romans 8, it delivers you out of a path that you had no idea was only leading you into pain, suffering, and destruction. It gives you a choice. It lets you know, hey, there's a way that works, and there's a way that seems right to man that doesn't work. And so now you're getting those choices. So he's saying is, look, the devil comes and takes it away, lest they would know there's a choice, lest they would know there's a right way to do it, lest they would know the way that leads to the kingdom. He says, and those on the rock are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy, but they have no root, who believe for a while, and in time of trial, they fall away. Okay, so there are those that will receive the word. They're excited about it. I mean, they really do. They get pumped up. They're excited. They get all zealous about it. They start researching and studying and listening to teachings and just gobbling it all up. But there's no root. What do you think makes the difference in the root? It's not information. Because those who are excited are going out there and grabbing tons of information. It's relationship. Remember, we said knowing, not in this teaching at this point, but maybe in other parts, I know we've talked about it, that knowing is a relational thing. And so having a relationship with the word, it says that it's the word of Elohim is the seed. So having a relationship with it. So these people were excited. So what were they doing? They were learning about the word of Elohim, learning about the seed, but they didn't have a relationship with the seed. The seed didn't take root. So in other words, you could put the seed, okay, in a plastic pot or any kind of pot, put no soil in it, and you know about the seed. You have a little, maybe a little thing that the seed came in, a little packet that says, this is a seed for whatever kind of plant and what kind of flower. And so you know what it is. You're learning about it. You can go online and Google all the information there is on that type of seed and what plant it is, etc. But if it's just sitting with no soil and no water and no the things that it needs, no roots come. So you have to interact with the seed. You can't just stick it in a container and say, okay, grow into a plant. It needs other things. You have to relate and interact with the seed. It's relational. And so he's saying, look, but there are those, because they got excited, but they have no root, who believe for a while. I mean, they're all excited, but then in the time of a trial, of a testing. So what teaching are we talking about here? Baptism of fire. Okay, there's going to be some sort of testing. Remember, in baptism of fire, you were washed clean by the baptism of water. You then were baptized in the Spirit, which is in the word of Elohim. You were receiving the truth and the word. And then he tests your relationship with the word by giving you fire. The baptism of fire is testing or trial to see where you're at in the progress, in your growth, in your relationship. And this person fails. In the time of trial, they fall away. Why? Because even though they were washed clean by water and they got excited about the word of Elohim, the baptism of Spirit, the truth that they received, they didn't do anything with it relationally. It stayed informational. They didn't interact with it. And I don't mean interacting with it in some sort of charismatic way or something. I'm talking about interacting with it, meaning having a relationship with the word by applying it into your life and seeing the fruit, seeing it works. It builds that confidence that you're on the right path. See, knowing something and not doing anything with it, there's no relationship there. I mean, a lot of you know a lot of information that would make you healthier. You'd lose weight, you'd fix other health conditions, whatever it is that you got going on, you have the information, but you haven't done anything. So you have no relationship with it. Or you've told people, oh, I'm going to start this diet, I'm going to do all these things, and you talked, you're all excited, but because you never did it, nothing ever happened, and you got discouraged, and you know something came up and distracted you, or a trial of some sort, and you kind of shifted gears and gave up. Until you interact with what you know, there's no relationship with what you know. You have to apply it. My guess here then is those who have heard the word, they received it with joy and had no root, those are ones who didn't do any interacting with what they received. They received it, no interaction with it, no relationship, no roots. So when trial came, there was a falling away. Do we not see this in the body today and every day and all through the years? There are people that will come, and you know they get so excited, and then 6 months later, you don't see them anymore. And it's not just because they went to a different congregation. They found a whole different path sometimes. You know, Julie and I, the Rebbetzin and I, when we would talk sometimes, somebody would come, and she would say, well, did you meet the new people? And I said, oh, yeah. I said, they're not going to be coming anymore. She goes, what do you mean? Oh, so they came up and said the magic words. What magic words? Oh, they'll come up and say, oh, Rabbi, this is the greatest thing. This is what I've always been looking for. This is, and I don't even know them yet. But they're so over the top. This is who they are right here. And usually that's what happens. They go home. Listen to how this happens. And some of you experienced this, but you made it through. When you first found out the truth, didn't you get excited about it? Didn't you want to tell all your friends and family members about it? Didn't they just jump for joy when you shared it with them? No. Okay? Some of you are sitting with that friend right now. Okay? And you did, but you had enough roots that didn't discourage you. But not everybody has enough roots because they're so new that it discourages them when they share with people and find out it's not a popular way of changing your life to. You're not going in a direction that's going to be real popular with everybody you know. Now, it will be really popular with the only people that count, the only beings that count, the Father and the Son. So keep that always in your mind. Okay, they will be delighted at your choice, even if nobody else is. Okay, they will be delighted at your choice. Okay, so Verse 14, and that which fell among the thorns, that which fell among the thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with worries and riches and the pleasures of life and bring no fruit to perfection. So, okay, they have interacted with it somewhat, but not deep enough on a level so that they're actually able to take themselves out of the throne seat to allow him to rule. Am I making sense? In other words, they've got things that they've got worries and they've got riches and pleasures and preferences. This is the I don't like, I would rather, I want to, but, you know, it's all the I's. Ay, ay, ay. All right? That's what we're talking about here. Because it talks about, well, if I tithe, I won't be able to pay my bills. Oh, but if I have to keep the Sabbath, my boss may fire me. This is the worries part. Oh, but my family won't talk to me, or I'll lose contact with my children or my parents or whatever the relationship may be. Because you know what happens is you start keeping Shabbat, and guess what? I promise you, you're going to get invited to a wedding or graduation on Saturday, and you're going to have to make a choice, and that worries you. But how do you handle that? Riches? Somebody may tempt you. Well, you know, if you work overtime on Saturday, I can give you double time. You could really pay your bills and get things worked out. Pleasures of life? We had a guy that didn't come. He was on Sunday. And one of his reasons, I really believe, why he never switched over to Saturday, he would come to our Tuesday night. Back then, I don't think it was Tuesday, many years ago. But we had a Bible study he would come to, but he would never really get to Saturday services because, see, Saturday was when he played his tennis game. Okay? And he'd been doing that for 15 years, and it was his tennis game. That's the pleasures of life. So there's no fruit. Where's the fruit? In other words, you are keeping, but probably the part you're keeping, you're doing reluctantly. And the stuff that you really need to be doing, you're not doing because it interferes with you. Well, I don't want to do that. I don't like to do that. It interferes with what I'd like and what I want to do. And so that's where you end up with that one, verse 14. Then verse 15, it says, but that on the good soil are those who, having heard the word with a noble and good heart, retain it. Okay, so what does it mean, a noble and good heart? In other words, a heart that is submissive to Yahweh, a heart that's going to get you off the throne and let him have his authority in your life. And then they retain the word of Elohim, that's the seed, and they bear fruit with endurance. So go back and listen to the teaching on endure and receive the crown of life. Endure and receive the crown of life. And so this is really key as we're going through these verses. Now listen, in verse 16 it says, and no one having lit a lamp covers it with a vessel and puts it under a bed, but he puts it out on a lampstand so that those coming see the light. You've all heard that verse, but understand that verse is connected to the sower of the seed verses. In other words, some of the problems happening, like in verse 14, is because you don't want people to know and see that you're doing this. He says you can't do this and hide it under, you know, the covers. You put it out there on a lampstand so that the light can be seen. Now, this doesn't mean you need to go knock on everybody's doors. But you do this without any shame. You do this with full joy that you're doing it and others see it. That's great. Let them see your light shine before men. Verse 17, for whatever is hidden shall be revealed and whatever is secret shall be known and come to the light. Okay, come to light. So, you know, you think you're going to hide something, but people are going to find out you're doing it anyway, whether it's something you should or shouldn't be doing. It's going to be brought to the light at some point. Now listen to this. All of this context brings us to verse 18. Therefore, take heed how you hear, right? Because it starts with the hearing of the word of Elohim. How you hear, for whoever possesses, key word, you're not only hearing it, but now you're taking ownership. You're possessing it. You realize it's for you and it's yours. Not yours that you can now do whatever you want with it, but that it's for you. It is yours. What he gives you is for you, and it's yours, and now you are responsible for what you do with it. He says, whoever possesses, to him more shall be given. If you will possess it. This is the one in verse 15, the one who takes it on the good soil and bears good fruit with endurance. However, listen, whoever does not possess, they've got the information. It says they've heard. He says, take heed how you hear. Are you hearing actively or passively? He says, those who have heard and don't possess, Even what he thinks he possesses shall be taken from him. See, the problem with a lot of you, and actually all of us at some point or another, we have our moments where we hear, but we haven't possessed, but we think we've possessed. We think we've taken ownership. We think we've embraced it in our lives. We think that we've allowed it to take root in us, when really we haven't. And so that's the problem, though, with a teacher or the Ruach trying to tell you or get your attention. If you already think you possess, you're not going to hear. That's why you can't share this with your Sunday church friends. They already think they possess, don't they? And they have every reason to feel that way. They've been taught that for 2,000 years now. And so why would they listen to you when they like you're like trying to share something? They're like, why are you sharing with me? I'm already great. I'm okay. Look, when I talk to somebody and they'll ask me sometimes, well, what do you do? You know, I said, well, I'm a messianic rabbi. Oh, they get all excited. I'm a rabbi. They don't know what messianic rabbi means, but they're like, okay, rabbi. They get excited. And then they want to talk to me about my beliefs and stuff. And so I always ask this question first. So, you know, where are you in your walk? How's your walk? Oh, rabbi, I'm so walking in favor and my life is so... They're already thinking they possess. There's nothing I'm saying that's going to help that situation except cause a fight. So I don't. Now, if they say to me, oh, well, actually, you know, it's interesting you asked me that because right now I'm kind of confused. Something just seems off or not right or wrong or something's not... Oh, that person might, I'm not saying they are, but they might be ready, because it starts, as we talked about in the beginning of the series on CC 101, the Covenant Community 101, it starts by him disturbing your peace and realizing that you don't have the possessing that you thought you had. So now what you thought you possessed, you're starting to question and go, and I wonder if I actually possessed what I thought I had. I wonder if I had what I thought I had. But he says, look, if you think you possess, but you don't, he says that it's even going to be taken away from you. So be careful. And by the way, I think part of that possess means nobody can teach me. I don't need anybody to teach me. I don't need to be shown anything. I figured it all out myself. I don't need you. I don't need anybody. The Ruach teaches me. The Ruach teaches me is another way of saying I don't need anybody to teach me, because the Ruach isn't teaching you anything. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying is that comes from a pride ego place. That really what you're wanting to say is, I don't want anybody else to have any authority in my life. I don't want anybody to say anything that I have to listen to. So my excuse is, the Ruach teaches me, the Spirit teaches me. Now, the Ruach brings to remembrance. Go back and listen to the Ruach teaching. The Ruach will stir to remembrance and bring to your memory and show and let you know when you're on the right path, etc. But the Ruach is not going to explain parables to you. The Ruach isn't piecing everything together. That's what the Melchizedek priesthood is for. The teaching Torah priesthood is for, to teach you what's in this book. Not because you can't understand it yourself, because that's the way he's chosen to do it. Who am I to question that? Question better, the question is, why do you question that? Well, what are you thinking? Where did that thought come from? The thought came from the place of, but I don't trust people. Good, don't trust people. Trust the Ruach to show you the right people. But first make it clear that you want to find the right people. Pray, Abba Father, show me the teachers you want me to be under. Show me those Ephesians 4 fivefold ministry guys that are supposed to be here until, that's the key word, until we have all come to the perfection of the measure of Yeshua, to the fullness of unity, etc., what it says in Ephesians 4. We need to get there. So we need to find those guys. And according to Paul, now maybe you don't like Paul, but according to Paul, those guys will be around and available until. And we haven't gotten to the until yet. So what are you thinking? Well, I'd be concerned with, he said, take heed, because if you think you possess, but you don't, even what you think you possess will be taken away. That should scare you a little bit. That should scare you a little bit. Now, notice how this relates to the thinking and mind of man and how it relates to authority. The thinking here is, Well, let's go back. The seed. What was the seed? The word of Elohim. What is the word of Elohim? In essence, it's authority. Elohim is giving you the word to let you know he's in charge, and if you would just trust him and let him be in charge, everything would be great. Isn't that what he says? So the word of Elohim is all about authority, isn't it? You submitting yourself unto his authority and receiving all the blessings that come with that relationship. What was the covenant in Exodus 19, which is, by the way, the covenant as covenants go? Everything is based on that simple idea of Exodus 19. If you would accept me as your authority, in other words, if you would do and obey everything I say, I will take you as my people and bless you to overflowing abundance, to joy overflowing, to peace overflowing, to health overflowing, to wealth overflowing, everything. So what is the word of Elohim? It's an idea that's being shared with you that you can think about how authority relates to the success you have in life, the things you want in life. The idea that was given to you, the seed, is the thought to know, hey, there's a creator, and that creator wants to bless us, but he has a condition that we listen to what he says. That's a thought. That's an idea. So what are you thinking? Are you thinking about that idea? That idea is all about authority. But there are people that think they possess. Those are people that are taking his word and they're reshaping it into their own image. They're bending what he says a little here and a little there so that it's more palatable to them. Well, I don't really like what he said here, but if I just tweak it a little bit, I could live with it. Or it would be okay. I mean, how many weddings am I going to go to on Saturday? So I'll just tweak it that it's okay to go to the 2 or 3. I'll tweak it to be okay to go to the graduations. I'll tweak it to be okay to do all these other things that are not Shabbat worthy. You don't understand what I'm talking about? Go listen to the Shabbat teachings. Oh, but I know I'm going to get the phone call. Rabbi, you don't understand. If I don't go to my sister's son's graduation, she will never talk to me again. And if you do go to that graduation, how is that going to affect your relationship with your creator? You're not worried about that, are you? You're only worried about your sister. She won't talk to you again. You know what? She might not. Didn't we read last week the verses that talk about, or the week before, about mother against daughter and sister against brother, father against, right? We read those verses. He says, I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword, right? And cut through everybody's delusion bubbles. But you don't understand. No, you don't understand. You don't understand what he's offering you. He says, take heed how you hear the word of Elohim. Are you hearing it unfiltered, or are you filtering it through you? Through the I don't like, I would rather, that's not fair, this is what I want. If you stop filtering it, you will have the fruit. Okay, it needs to be taken in unfiltered. You don't get to run it through the you, the little you filter. See, you're thinking you actually have sovereignty and authority. That's already part of your delusion. This world is under authority, whether you like it or not. And you choose to be slave under one master or another, either slave to self, Hasatan, or the Elohim of the world, the creator of all things. But you think it's just you. You think you're in charge. That's a real strange illusion, but we have a lot of people out there thinking it. Probably the most common delusion there is. So let's make sure that we take heed. That's a pretty strong thing. He didn't say, hey, listen, you might want to pay attention to this. He said, take heed. You know what? I think he got loud here and said, look, therefore, take heed how you hear. I mean, it's a caution, crying aloud, sparing not type of thing. By the way, this has come up, and I'm going to bring it up here because it just seems like it might as well be an appropriate place to bring it. Okay, as adults, when we talk, one or more of us may get loud because we're passionate or we're strong in our feeling about something. By the way, if someone's getting loud, that doesn't mean they're yelling at you. I've been accused about that a lot. Rabbi yelled at me. No, yelling at is different than just getting loud. I can assure you, at least the way this reads, there's a good chance that he was getting loud. that Yeshua said, for whatever is hidden shall be revealed. It says, therefore, take heed. He's talking to a big crowd of people. He's saying, look, pay attention. You don't think that the prophets got loud? You don't think it was not a little loud when, you know, the way, you know, it's in written words, it was in a letter, when Paul said, you foolish, stupid Galatians. If he was saying it in person, I think he probably would have been a little loud with that. He didn't just go, oh, you stupid Galatians, blah, 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 blah. You know, he would have been like, "You, what are you doing?" And by the way, every one of you has had a conversation with somebody, a child or a family member or a friend or a coworker or someone who works for you, where you looked at them and said, what are you doing? And you just go over and say, what are you doing? Now, sometimes you might do that, but there's times when you might have been like, because it was something like, whoa, well, you really need to wake them up and like, what are you doing? Yes or no? Well, I think that Scripture, sometimes he has to get loud with us. He's not yelling at us. He's just trying to get our attention and saying, what are you thinking? You know, a lot of you listen to me. I get loud with you every week, like now. Why? Because we're not awake. We're still in our delusion bubbles. We need to have something puncture through that. By the way, that's why we get louder in our conversations. We feel like when we were quiet, somehow it wasn't penetrating. Is that not true? So we get louder to try to push through the walls. By the way, it still doesn't mean you're getting yelled at. So let's be careful with how that's perceived. Let's go to John 16. And we are not going to get to as far as I thought I would today. Shock. John 16. I'm just stalling so I don't have to deal with Romans 8. Okay, John 16. Actually, I'm very much looking forward to Romans 8. I got that. I think I'm going to really surprise you with some things there. All right, John 16, verse 1. Yochanan 16, 1. These words I've spoken to you so that you do not stumble. So we should be, this is a take heed. I've said these things so you don't stumble. They shall put you out of the congregations, but an hour is coming when everyone who kills you shall think he is rendering service to Elohim. How many of you have run into people that have done you damage, harm, or at least tried to, and their claim and their thoughts were that they were doing something to defend Elohim? All those things that are done in the name of Elohim. And this they shall do to you because they did not have a relationship. They did not know the Father nor me. See, that relationship would have fixed the problem. They do what they do. This goes back to the parable of the seed, because they think they possess, but they don't. They don't have the relationship that they need to have. He says, look, these people are going to do what they do. They're going to take you up. They're going to kill you. They're going to put persecutions on you, all in the name of the Creator. And they're going to do this because they really don't have a relationship with the Father or me. That's what he says. They don't have a relationship with the Father or the Son. That's why we have the teaching. And I think that one's done over 10, 11, 12, what is it, 11 parts, the Father and the Son? Do you know? That's the question. That's the name of the teaching. Do you have a relationship? Do you even know if you really have a proper relationship with the Father and Son? Or do you just think you do? How many of you, when you were in church, thought you had a relationship with the Father and the Son? All of you, right? Okay, how many of you, when you came into this, came to realize you didn't have the relationship you thought you had? Okay? And so that's why that teaching is so important. Do you actually have a relationship, or is it going through your filter where you think you do, but you don't? Now, it says in Scripture that he has given us over to strong delusion, which then he has a sword to cut through if you'd let him. When he chooses, he's going to come and poke at you. If you would just let him, he'll puncture that whole thing, blow it up, and let you see the truth the way it really is. He says, but I have said these words to you so that when the hour comes, you remember that I have told them to you. And these words I did not say to you at the beginning, for I was with you. So he says, look, you didn't need to know that this was going to happen to you because I was with you and you were safe. But when I'm gone, that protection will no longer be there. And this is going to happen. So I'm going to use that as a possible, maybe I'm wrong, I'm going to take license here. I'm going to say that applies to everything in here that he says to us. He told it to us so that when it comes, you remember. That includes the verses that say that you may not be at peace with all your family members. I didn't come to bring peace but the sword. Oh, but then it happens. And now you're all, you know, your whole world is all screwed up. Because after all, now your child or your parent or your cousin or your friend, whatever, is no longer talking to you. At least that's what they're claiming. They'll talk to you someday. But for right now, they're not. And they're all upset and they're all angry and they're smearing you all over Facebook and telling all everybody about you and misrepresenting the truth about what you're really doing. And they're telling you you're in a cult and everything else. And they're all attacking you. And you act all shocked and upset that it's happening. Why? He's told you so that you'd remember. Am I reading this wrong? Am I taking too much license? Everything in this book, Paul said, is as an example for you. We're going to see that here in a minute when we get to 1 Corinthians. He wrote it in the book and said that all of the Old Testament, all of the accounts that are in there are to remind you that you remember what he said would happen, and what did happen will happen again. Then why do you act so surprised and upset when it happens? It's like the kid. You tell the kid, don't do that, it's going to break. Don't do that, it's going to break. They do it and it breaks. Then they get all upset. Especially when you're telling them and it's something that's theirs. Like it's a toy of theirs or something. Don't do that, it's not supposed to be done that way. Don't do that, it's not designed to do that. Don't do that, boom, they do it, it breaks. Then they come to you. What are you coming to me for? I told you, don't do it, it would break. Guess what? You did it and it broke. Okay, now take your broken toy and have fun. That's what we act like. We do what we shouldn't do, and he warns us and tells us, and then we act all upset when it happens. You know, it says, Elohim will not be mocked. You will reap what you sow. That's a law, just like if I drop this pen, it'll fall. It's a law. You will reap what you sow. What also is a law is that if he says choosing him and embracing that relationship will put you at odds with family members, it's because he knows that's true. Not because he wants it to happen. But he's not going to tell you something's going to happen that's not going to happen. Why would he waste his breath with that? And then we act all upset and surprised. And then you call me, or you call Robert, and we talk to you. What are you upset about? My children won't talk to me anymore. And? Well, they won't talk to me anymore. Why? Because I'm keeping Torah now. You mean like what the verse said? Yeah? So get over it. I don't know what else to say. I don't want you to like it. It's not going to be. He never says count it joy when your family members are all mean to you, although James says count it joy when you find yourself in trials. But Yeshua didn't say, hey, you should just go have a party and celebrate because your children or your parents or some other family was not talking to you anymore. No, it's upsetting, and I agree with you, it's upsetting. And I will pray that you get comfort to resolve all that. But don't act like somehow you want to now lash out and blame Torah or blame Yeshua or blame the Father because this happened. You want to blame anything? You raised up your child in a way they should go, and they're not departing from it, and now you're on a different path, and now they're all looking at you like you're nuts because you did such a good job raising them in the first place. That doesn't mean you want to feel all guilty either. You were in that delusion bubble too. You didn't know. You thought you possessed when you didn't. You see how this all ties together? But he says here, remember, he says, look, he said, I have said these words to you so that when the hour comes, when these things that I told you would happen, not just the killing of you, etc., in verse 2, but all the other things he said would happen, I told you so that when they happen, you remember that I told you. I have told you that it's almost as important to embrace when the bad stuff happens that he said would happen, meaning embrace it from the point of view that it proves the truth and reality that this book tells the truth. Because sometimes that stuff is easier to see than the other stuff, the miracles. But when he says these things will happen, and they do, even if they're negative, like as soon as you came into Torah observance and embraced a better, more accurate relationship with the Father and the Son, your family members were not real thrilled, and all that stuff that he said would happen, happened. That proves the book true. He said 2,000 years ago something you're experiencing right now. How did he know? Because he's who he is. Because the book says who he is. This helps to prove the book is true. Not just the miracles and the signs and wonders and how he brought them out of Egypt. And so you're looking only for those things in your life to prove he's true. What about all the stuff hitting the fan stuff that he says, hey, listen, when you choose to come with me, you're going to have to pick up your cross and bear your burden because you are not going to be popular. Did he promise popularity to anybody? No. The nation was promised a bunch of stuff when the nation as a nation in Deuteronomy would have done as a nation everything. You, in the dispersion, and that's where you are, we're in the punishment. We're still in the Deuteronomy 28, second half of the chapter. And we act surprised. Just like the kid. My God. I told you. I warned you. If you keep doing that, it's going to break. Or if you keep doing that, you're going to lose it. Like they're playing with something, you know it's going to fall off and just, oh, I told you. What happened? The kid's crying. I lost my thing. Were you doing this with it? Yeah. Didn't I tell you if you did that, you'd lose it? Yeah. All right, so. I'm not getting you another one. See, but then what do? We coddle that. We enable that. We entitle that. And then we are wrecking our children's lives. You know what? Most of your children, those of you that are older with like adult children, some of them are suffering now because you didn't let them suffer enough when they were kids. Some of them. Some of them are suffering now because you rescued them too much as children. And that rescuing. Look, you know what? Yahweh, I'm not going to say he figured it out. He shows us. How many times did he rescue Israel after they came out of Egypt, right? And at one point he finally says, I will not save you again. In other words, not forever, but you're now going to suffer your consequences. I'm done saving you, and you're not getting it. In other words, he was enabling the bad behavior. Because after all, they knew, well, as bad as it gets, he'll intervene and he'll save us. Now, it's not that Yahweh didn't know it and he had to learn that. He's showing us by an example. See what happens? He's saying, watch me. I'm the creator of the universe. I'm delivering this people over and over again. Every time they do something stupid, because what's, by the way, let's define stupid. Not doing what Yahweh said. Okay, that's a good definition of stupid. So they would do stupid things and it would blow up in their face and then they'd come crying to me. And every time they did, I rescued them until finally I said, no. Now you're going to suffer your own consequences of your own actions. You did this, not me. You brought this on yourself, not me. But you notice it's a thinking process. We've taught our children, our parents taught us, the world that we live in, the culture, the environment teaches us to think a certain way. We see things, we observe things, and then we process it. And what we think about it has been programmed into us, forming that delusion bubble, the way we think the world is. And we're surrounded ourselves with this sort of filtering bubble, the way we were indoctrinated by the world, by people, the way we were taught, this is the way things are. If you grew up somewhere else, you'd have been taught slightly differently. Key word is slightly. You'd still be taught most of the main things the same. But culturally, there may be some differences. But hey, I mean, think about generationally. I'll give you a certain way we do this. If you go back to, and I don't know how far to go back, but let's say we go back like 50, 60, 70 years, at least, like a generation. I don't think if you go back to that generation would have accepted or thought it was proper for a child to address any adult without Mr. or ma'am or miss or sir or something like that. Is that true? Is it true today? No. Why? Because we allowed it. We enabled it. I'm not saying it's a horrible thing that they don't do that anymore. I'm saying just understand how it happens. We generationally did not continue that, so it stopped. And I think, by the way, with a lot of that also comes a lot of the level of disrespect out there. Because the person who was taught to say, sir, ma'am, and all that was also told, you will respect your elders. That was drummed in. Now there's no respect for anybody on any level. None at all. And so here we are. Again, it's a thinking process. Children today don't do it because they think it's okay not to do it. And why do they think so? Because they don't see you doing it. See, your children are learning every day just watching you. And they watch how you treat other people in authority. If you're married, the husband watches, the kids watch the way the husband treats the wife and the wife treats the husband. And if there's no respect there, the children are learning already disrespect. And so how do you think that affects their thinking about authority? And we see that playing out all through all of this. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. That's probably as far as we're going to get. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We were just referring to this section. Chapter 10 and verse 1. For I do not wish you to be ignorant. Do you see how much this is actually, did you even realize in your Bible how much? Take heed, I want you to know, I want you to remember, I don't want you to not understand. I don't want you to be ignorant, I don't want you to be stupid, I don't want you to make dumb mistakes. There's a lot of those verses in here. Here's Shaul saying, I don't want you to be ignorant, brothers. I don't want you to be confused. I don't want you to have a lack of understanding. I want you to understand that this, he says, all of our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. By being under the cloud, what does that mean? They were under a covering. There was authority there. And all were immersed into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. By being immersed into Moses, it's not being cultishly like into a man. What he's saying is they were all immersed into Torah. That's a metaphor here. He's saying you were immersed into Moses, meaning the law of Moses, what Moses gave. Okay? They were all immersed into it. Some of you have your toe in it, but you haven't immersed yourself in it. You know, some of you, like, you ever see those people, if you've been by a swimming pool, they kind of sit on the edge and they kind of splash some water on themselves and splash. They don't want to just immerse themselves in there. But it's cold or it's this or it's that. Yeah, but you see the other ones that are already in, they're all having a great time. But you're reluctant. He said they were all immersed into Moses and in the cloud and the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed, and the rock was Messiah. So they're all feeding on the seed. What's the seed? The word of Elohim. What is Messiah? The word of Elohim made flesh. In the beginning was the word, and the word was Elohim, and the word was with Elohim. And that word put on flesh. We call that Mashiach. We call that word putting on flesh Messiah Yeshua. He says, so they all drank of that and ate of that back then? Yes, because he's the walking, talking, living Torah. Some of you may have seen on Facebook a couple of days ago, Manny made a little graphic for me, you know, that had the loop, okay? Where we go from John 14, I am the way, I am the life, I'm the truth. Oh, truth, there's the word truth. And then Psalm 119 says that the word is truth. And then John 1 says the word that's truth put on flesh. So what is Yeshua? That word on Mount Sinai, the word given to Moses, Yeshua is the fullness, the embodiment of that in the flesh. And that's what they were feeding on. It says, man cannot live on bread alone, but what? On every word that comes out of the mouth of Elohim. He said they fed, they drank, they ate of that food, of that spiritual drink, that spiritual food, which was what? It was Messiah. However, there was a problem here. However, with most of them, Elohim was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Do you know there's other verses that talk about, and I didn't look it up for today, where it says that you have a job to figure out what is well pleasing in the sight of Elohim? And they were taught what was well pleasing, and he still wasn't pleased because they chose. Their thought process was wrong, so they got their emotions attached to something incorrectly, which then manifested in actions that were wrong, that ended up in habits that were wrong, that ended up getting them killed. The destiny of death. He says, most of them, Elohim was not well pleased, for he laid them low in the wilderness. And these, which ones? The ones that he wasn't well pleased with. He said, these became examples for us, so that we should not lust after evil as those indeed lusted. So look at the example of what happened to those that would not immerse themselves in, fully possess the word of Elohim. Where did they end up? Laid low in the desert. They ended up dead. What caused it? They lusted after evil. They lusted after evil. What is evil? We've defined this many times. Here's your definition. Evil is when you do or function in a way that is contrary to what the Creator designed you to do or function. When something is used or functions against or in sort of opposition to the way it was designed. So they lusted after evil. They were designed to do and submit to his authority, and they covenanted and said, everything you say, we will do. That's the design. To not do so is evil. Are we clear? Does it make sense? Anybody disagree? So they agreed to do, and then when they didn't, that was evil. Why? Because they lusted after doing what they wanted, not what he said. Lust. Let's make this more simple. When I hear the word lust, I always think sexual stuff, and then it's hard to see anything other than sexual stuff as lust. Lust is simply your desire for something, a strong desire for something. Because when that word has been used over the centuries, it's always connected only to sexual stuff mostly. Let's just call it a desire that's really strong for something. Because you don't even think that you lust after food. Oh, I don't lust after food. No, if you have a strong desire for something that drives you to go and do it over and over again, or to put a high priority on it above all other things, but you don't care about other stuff, that's a lust. They wanted what they wanted with so much desire, it caused them to do evil instead of good. They did what they wanted instead of what he said. So let's just make sure we're understanding lust here. They lusted after evil. They had a strong desire to do what they wanted that was not what he said. Let's translate that into proper modern English. Okay? They had a really strong desire to put themselves in front of him. Whenever something he wanted didn't really be, it wasn't really what I wanted, I would choose me. That's lusting after evil. Choosing yourself above him. Isn't that what they did when they got laid low in the desert? Isn't that why? He said, go and possess the land. And they said, oh, but it's scary and I don't like it. And there's big people there. And there's so many of them. They got walled cities. Ah! So did they trust him? No. Then these geniuses, and I'm not picking on them, because I mean, the reason I wrote this teaching was we sometimes will look back at Israel and say, what were they thinking? Forgetting we're just as stupid and just as foolish. But then these brilliant people, which were the same, after, how many of you have seen your child do the same thing? After he said no, after he punished them because they didn't want to go in, after they said no, he said go, they said no, he punished them, then he said, oh, now we're going to go in. But he said no, he said don't go in now. So they went in anyway, being double stupid. But aren't you the same? Don't we do that? How quick is your child to try to fix things and do things right after you already told him to do it, he didn't do it, now you punish him, now he wants to do it, and then you said, never mind, I'll take care of it, and now he goes to do it. And now you're mad at him for not listening again. That's what's going on. He said, but look, these things are for examples for us so that we don't do what they did. So that we should not choose to desire our ways above his ways as those indeed did. I'm going to just kind of translate it that way in verse 6. And do not become idolaters, as some of them did, as has been written. The people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Now, some of you are going to read that word idolatry and read that little phrase there and go, oh, that's what was happening with the golden calf. So that's what he's talking about. No, he's talking about the eating and drinking and standing up to play and celebrating something that's not him as if it's him. Not just that they made the calf. Why were they dancing, singing, and celebrating? Because they were now looking at saying, this is our Elohim that brought us out of Egypt. It was a thought. It was a thinking process. It was a wrong thinking process. They were now starting to think that thing that they made is what brought them out of Egypt. It wasn't just that they made something, but what were they thinking about it? He says, neither should we commit whoring, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Neither let us try Messiah, as some of them also tried and were destroyed by serpents. Neither grumble, as some of them also grumbled and were destroyed by the destroyer. And I'm not going to break that all down. We'll save a little time there. I want to get down to a verse further down here. He says, and all of these came upon them as examples, and they were written as a warning to us on whom the ends of the ages have come. Listen now, this is why. And this goes right back to the parable of the seed. Verse 12, so that he who thinks he stands, let him take heed, lest he fall. Isn't that the same as to he who thinks he possesses when he doesn't, let him realize he doesn't, lest it get taken away from him. You think Paul knew about these things? You think he understood? Now, he wasn't there when Yeshua said it, but he understood the principle. He wasn't there when he gave the parable of the sower of the seed, but he understood the principle. The principle being that you see in the examples all throughout the Tanakh. They were given, they thought they possessed, and when they thought wrong, he took it away from them. Isn't that what happened? They were in the land. They thought they possessed the land. They thought the land was ours. After all, he gave it to us. But they didn't do what they were supposed to do in the land, so guess what he did? He said, you thought you possessed the land, but you don't. I'm going to have you taken out of here. Now, he wouldn't have just told them, you need to leave. He had Babylon come and take them away. He had the Assyrians come and take them away. And so they all disappeared from the land, from that thought process leading to action, leading to a ramification. Cause and effect, reaping and sowing. They thought they possessed. They thought, well, we're his people. He won't let anything happen to us. What do you mean he won't let anything happen? You're making choices, bringing this stuff on yourself. Children might come up. I've had my kids come up to me at times, all upset about something. And I look them in the eye and say, what are you mad at me for? What are you mad at that person for? You did this to yourself. And they're all upset. They're coming to me. Well, go be upset somewhere else. You did this to yourself. You're supposed to be upset about it. If I fix it for you and take it away, you'll never learn. I've had children lose valuable things, leave them in cars, leave them on planes, leave them wherever. And if you ask my child, I didn't replace it. You lost it, that's it. You'll need to learn now to watch your stuff. You may think, oh, you're so cold and mean, and no. That child is learning. Where are we? Verse 12. So verse 13. Now he does say this. He says, look, no trial is overtaking you except such as common to man. In other words, he's saying, look, you're going to be through trials, just like they did back in the Egypt days, and he's going to run you through different situations that happen. He says, but just remember, Elohim is trustworthy, who shall not allow you to be tried beyond what you're able, but with the trial shall also make the way of escape, enabling you to bear it. Now, he didn't say that he was just going to do it all for you. He's going to show you the path. He's going to show you the way. My daughter's song just came in my head. Anyway, she's got to show, you know, keep showing me the way. Okay, never mind. Okay, all right? But he's going to provide that way of escape. But you then have to what? And he says you have to be able to bear it. You got to bear up under the trial. He's going to give you the way of escape and walk that path. But you have to be able to bear it. By the way, he doesn't say that you're going to come out of it and everything's going to be fixed. It just means you'll be able to bear it. So it doesn't mean that all of a sudden the fact that you were all upset about this, he's now going to make it okay for you to go to the wedding, or all of a sudden the wedding's going to change to Sunday or some other thing. He's simply saying you'll be able to bear the problem, the trial. He says, therefore, based on all of this stuff, my beloved ones, flee from idolatry. What is idolatry? Putting anything in Yah's place. Flee from it. That's the examples that we're seeing in the Tanakh. He says, I speak as to wise men. Judge for yourselves what I say. He's saying, you guys are smart. You guys have wisdom. Does this not make sense? That's what he's saying to them. We'll go to one more because it's only one verse. Go to chapter 13 here in 1 Corinthians. Okay? 1 Corinthians 13:11. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child, but when I became a man, I put away or I did away with the child. Now, it says childish matters. The Greek actually doesn't say that. I went into the Greek really hard last night just to make sure. He basically said, I put away and did away with the childish. So let's not put the word matters in there, because then we might think of it's childish things. Now we start thinking of objects. He said, I stopped being childish. That's really what the Greek says there. There's no word there for matters. That word is not there. Okay? He says, when I became a man, I did away with being childish. I abrogated the childish is really what it kind of talks about. What he's talking about here is, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child when I was a child. Well, guess what? When you were a Christian, you thought as a Christian, you reasoned as a Christian, but then you got pulled into a greater understanding of reality. The delusion bubble got cut with the sword of the word of the truth of light. And now you should be reasoning and thinking as a Torah observant Israelite in the context of Messiah. And you actually should be also doing it as an adult. You know, I don't see anywhere where it talks about the adults of Israel. It always talks about the children of Israel. I wonder why. You ever notice that? And the children of Israel did this, and they spoke to the children of Israel. No adults in the room? Well, you see the way they behave, you wonder. But the father's looking at us today, says the same thing. Are there any adults in the room? Are we still doing the childish? What is childish? Childish is me, 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 mine, mine, mine. Right? Whereas a kid always going, it's mine, mine, mine. Take a pen, mine. And they're fighting over, take the toy, mine, mine. They're grabbing things, mine, mine, mine. They only can think of themselves. You have to teach the child to be generous, to care about others, to put others first, to do things that way. Are you ready to put away the child and grow up and be the adult? Now, this is not in opposition to when he says you need to come as a child. Come as a child so that I can teach you how to be an adult, is what he's saying. Come as a child. The problem is you come with the hard-headed, stubborn, I think I know everything adult attitude. So you're not coming as a child. And then you still act like a child. You know, I saw in a cartoon, I don't remember where I saw it, many, many, many years, like 20, 30 years ago, a little cartoon, one of those little one-frame cartoons, and the two kids were sitting on a staircase, and the parents were just, with a bunch of other adults, just playing, like, just acting really stupid, and whatever, they were partying and stuff, and the one kid looks at the other and says, I can't wait to grow up so I can act like a kid. Because the parents are always telling the kid to grow up and act like an adult. And then the kid's saying, well, but when I get to be an adult, I finally get to play and goof off and do whatever because then it's okay. I'm not saying don't have childlike fun and childlike enthusiasm. What he's saying is, look, you got to put away the childish thoughts and reasonings. You want to come with the child openness to learn, knowing they don't know. Because the child knows they don't know. It doesn't happen to you a teenager where you think you know everything. As a child, you know you don't know. You're always walking up to parents going, here, help. I can't open it. You always know to go ask. Help, 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 help. Okay? But once you've shown them once or twice, they're like, no, me do it. And you know they can't yet, but they're going to be all fighting with it. Now they're starting to develop that pride and ego and stuff. Let's be careful with this. He says, and you need to be able to say these words for yourself. Write that down somewhere. Say, you need to have the embrace this. When I was a child, yes, I spoke as a child. When I was in the world, I spoke as the world. When I was a Christian, I spoke as a Christian. When I was an atheist, I spoke as an atheist. When I was a whatever, it just doesn't matter. Whatever you were, when I was a Jew, I spoke as a Jew. But now, as a messianic, Torah-preserving Israelite, I need to become an adult and do away with whatever that was before. Not just childish things. Do away with that other stuff, the stuff that wasn't correct, whatever it was. The problem is, most of you are still coming to this with all of that, or big chunks of it. And then you're confused because it doesn't match up, because you haven't come empty, an empty vessel ready to receive. That's when he says, come as a child, more of a vessel ready to receive. Okay? Teach me, teach me. You've seen the children when you're doing something and they want to do it. Like, well, show me. I want to do it. I want to do it. And they're just ready. And they're ready to learn. You get older and you think, hey, can I help you with that? No, I got it. You know you don't have any idea what you're doing, but you want to tell somebody because you're afraid to embarrass yourself. No, I got it. Sure. That doesn't usually go very well. And then after you break it and have to buy a new one, then you go ask for help. It's foolishness. Let's pray. Father, we come before you, and Father, we want to confess that we are foolish. We're foolish when we don't allow you to rule and reign in our lives. We're foolish when we don't create the good ground so that we can truly possess what you're giving us, so that we can understand and embrace what the covenant is, our subjection to you in full emunah, in full trust and belief, that doing so will bring all the blessings that you promise. Father, help us to come as a child. Help us to come as a child, but to grow up and not stay a child. To put away the childish thoughts and reasonings and to now reason as an adult, a mature adult, an adult that's transforming and conforming to the image of Yeshua. Father, we are just so blessed with your word. We appreciate the warnings, the heed, the take heeds, and the I said this so that you would know and that you would remember. Help us to embrace all that, that we are taking heed and that we are remembering, and that when things happen, the Ruach will bring to remembrance so that we can say, oh, this is what he was talking about. This is what it was all about. And then we can react appropriately and we can think correctly and then take the correct actions. Father, help us to really and truly embrace what your word says. Help us to truly get out of the way and let you reign. Help us to truly submit. Help us to really take our thoughts into captivity and hold on to the correct ones and put them in our hearts. Let strong desire wrap around them so that they bear the fruit of good actions and good habits and the destiny of the kingdom. Father, we love you. We love you. We praise you and appreciate so much all these things that you do in our lives, and especially that you would care enough to put in writing the word, the manual, the instruction that we would need to be successful in this life and in this world that you created. Father, we thank you. We bless you. We give you all glory and all honor in the name of Yeshua, our Messiah. Amen. Amen. Amen.